And my talk is called Practicing with the Body. That wasn't its original name. My original name for it was Zen and Chronic Illness. And I felt like that was boring and limiting. And I just kind of was like working title Zen and Chronic Illness until I went, oh, I know, Practicing with the Body, because everybody here should have a body, unless there's some disembodied voice somewhere talking during this, and then I'll go, well, I was wrong about that. But that's that's an assumption. And before I start, I'd just like to say that all bodies are different, of course. I am not a doctor, of course. And do what your doctor recommends. See your doctor. If you have something contagious, this talk doesn't apply to that, because a lot of time I will say things like, well, I'm about to tell you how I did it anyway, and attended anyway, and, you know, worked through it and all this stuff. And it's like, no, 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 I'm not talking about if you have a cold or you have a flu or you have COVID, come anyway. I know, I'm not saying that. So if it's contagious, that's not what this is referring to. This is more like chronic illnesses that are being managed, or, you know, something in the moment. So, so stay home if you're sick. And this talk is, I'd like to call it a beginner's mind talk, very accessible. So nothing too challenging. and some of the things I plan to talk about today are five concepts: paying attention, not knowing, metta, acceptance, and gratitude. And how do I get to those five things? By being sick? You'll see. and I'll be quoting a bunch of folks because I love doing that. So that's it. And I'll be asking you guys a question here and there. So be ready, because I'm going to ask them. And that being said, I'd like to start with my own Zazen Kai story. Yuka, I know you had one, and I have one too, from the same Zazen Kai from June. And we had a Zazen Kai at Bright Way, which is one day of session basically taken out. And I really wanted to attend Here in the Dirt, because I wasn't able to attend Sashin because I was ill for that and not able to drive. So this time I was just coming out of it. I'm like, okay, I'm going to do it. And the night beforehand, I started to feel a little sick. And something that happens to me is that if something goes wrong the night before, something is planned and scheduled, especially if it's early and I really want to do it, now I'll start getting anxious about the thing. And then that anxiety will feed on the thing. And then that thing will feed on the anxiety. And insomnia spiral starts to occur. So insomnia spiral did occur. Kept me up. Could not sleep. And I remember distinctly looking at the clock and going, it's 5 a.m. It's 5 a.m. And I'm not only sick, but I'm also sleep deprived. Okay, so am I doing this? No. And so I emailed, in this order, Domio and my husband, who was sleeping there. I had to email him to tell him, right? Because he's not conscious anyway. And my offspring, who lives with us. And so I emailed these three people with the same whiny email of like, oh, I really wanted to do this thing, but I can't do this thing because I'm so sick and I got no sleep and blah, 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 blah. Yes, this whiny email sent to Domio first. and I, it was basically like, I can't do this. I'm too sick. This will never happen. I'm staying home, blah, blah, blah. And the punchline is that after sending that email, I got in my car. And I drove to the Zendo and I did Zazen Kai. So what was I thinking and what was I doing? I have no idea. I just figure I might as well surrender to this and trust. And again, nothing contagious. So, and nothing that I didn't know about or nothing new, nothing emergent, you know. I figured, well, if I'm going to be sick anyway, why not be sick here with y'all around me? I felt, I don't know, I feel loved enough here that it's okay. You know, whatever happens, happens. Because I just didn't know, and that not knowing was also okay. So the result was I was okay. And sometimes I felt a little bit better through the course of the day. Sometimes I felt a little bit worse. And I was doing work outside. And it was like, well, I'm just going to do this work outside. I'm just going to go sit on the pavement in the dirt in the shade and just move at whatever speed I was going to move at. I was just going to do it. And I tried to stay very quiet in my own head about it. Tried to stay very calm. I did Sanza Domyo, and she advised me to allow the experience of being mindfully sick. And I said, why not? I'm able to do this right now. So I did. I was sick and I was mindful about it. So what would the Buddha do about this? We had a talk about this recently. And I'm like, yeah, there's probably times when Shakyamuni Buddha was not feeling 100% and did it anyway. So, and speaking of Shakyamuni Buddha, this is going back to, I'll call back to other people's talks. I'm sort of doing a summary of everybody's talk. James's talk recently, he included Siddhartha's chariot ride in depth at the beginning of August. And this was really, he told it really beautifully and perfectly. But just real briefly, the story of Siddhartha Gautama's life is that before he became the Buddha as a young prince leaving the palace for the first time, he saw a sick person and an elderly person and a corpse and then a holy man. But he did see a sick person for the first time, and he was shocked. He'd never seen it before, never been exposed to it. But he faced the fact that we're all of the nature to grow old, fall ill, and eventually our bodies will die. The bad news is that experiencing some form of pain, disability, or distressing symptoms of the body are inevitable at some point. And unfortunately, very few of us have bodies that operate perfectly. And everyone has a body that will operate less and less perfectly with time. And I'm really sorry to be such a bummer. I'm really sorry to be the bearer of bad news. But for many people, this is not that surprising bad news. This is expected. This is daily news. And when you're living with illness, you don't have to look far to see this. You don't have to leave the palace and go out and go, oh my gosh, you know, you just look in the mirror. So my first quote is from Kajitsu Williams. He's a priest in training at the online Tree Leaf Sangha, who faces his own serious illnesses every day. And I'm quoting him with permission. In Zen practice, we do not look away from suffering. We meet it directly. The Buddha's first noble truth states that life includes dukkha, unease, discontent, and suffering. Chronic illness does not make this more true. It only makes it harder to ignore. But there's good news here. These symptoms, these sensations are a natural part of having a body. Having a human body is indeed a wonderful opportunity to learn about the Dharma, to practice, to be with Sangha, to experience and express our own Buddha natures. And in Dogen's Fukanza Zengi, he says, you have gained the pivotal opportunity of human form. But human bodies are far from perfect, and we think so hard and we focus so hard on these imperfections. the tendency of our minds to obsess over these sensations or to outright resist and push symptoms of illness away is at a deep level of consciousness. It's hardwired into our monkey brains to do this. It's also sort of a good thing. I mean, when something's going wrong, you want to know. Like when you touch a hot stove, you pull your hand away because it's hot. You want to react to pain or, you know, discomfort. It's normal survival instinct to pay attention to our body signals. You have a body, and so it is perfectly natural to feel fatigue, pain, cramping, itching, breathlessness, weakness, numbness, and every other darn thing, or any other darn thing your body decides to signal you with. So the first idea I'm going to toss out there is paying attention on purpose, specifically to what your body is telling you. So many of us don't pay attention to our body signals. We can turn away or deny or distract ourselves. When we work at some physical activity, it's natural to, and smart and restorative, to rest. We feel tired because we're out of energy. So we need to rest and restore ourselves. So why wouldn't it, I was thinking, like, why wouldn't it be reflexive and natural to take a nap or get extra sleep when you're tired? I don't know. This is something I'm working on for myself. To resist rest. It's like just habitual. I'll find myself going, well, I'm just gonna burn right through. I'm just not gonna nap. It's a waste of time. But it's like, come on. If I just paid attention and turned inside and listened, it's like your body's telling you, do the thing. Okay. Darlene Cohen wrote a book called Turning Suffering Inside Out, and it's in the library because I returned it. I had it out for a long time. It's so good. It's so good. Anyway, what one of her main attitudes is to pay attention to your body. She says, learning to take the body's point of view, because we're more accustomed in our daily lives to the process of cogitating, planning, reasoning, judging, creating, than to the experience of feeling our bodily sensations and impartially processing our sensory input. Most of us need some practice receiving the information our bodies are always sending us. It's strange that we don't automatically know how to dip into our body's wisdom. Why do we have to learn something that should be instinctual? The answer is that it is indeed deeply instinctual. But most of us in our postmodern technological worlds have lost our primal connection to our physical being. So you can listen for a change, you can pay attention for a change. And when it's appropriate for you, you can pay attention to those body signals. And I know what you're thinking when you're in pain, it's like, great. So you're telling me to pay closer attention to the pain. I mean, wait a second. And what if you pay attention to your body telling you something and then you don't really know how to respond to that? Or you tried everything, every response you can think of, and you can't respond with anything that really works. And my thing is, just make the hurting stop. Just make it stop. If only bodies were simple and you could just click on off, that would be really nice. But they are not simple. And if there were a way to make the hurting stop, you would have done something already. And you're probably doing something already, like seeing a doctor, you know. However, sometimes you've already seen doctors and they don't have anything for you. Sometimes you feel something that doesn't match to the cause. Sometimes you don't even know the cause. You don't even know the source of what is going on. Let's see, where am I? Oh. Yeah, so medical conditions and chronic illnesses can be very complex and unpredictable. And nothing is a given about how you're going to feel at any given point. Like a lot of things in life are just You don't know, right? This is a part of not knowing or letting go of fixed ideas about yourself, others, and the universe. What if we stopped assuming that we knew everything or could know everything? What would happen if we let go of fixed ideas about our bodies? Would our bodies cease to function? Would the hurting stop? I have found that relaxing my grip a little bit on these thoughts, just a little, doesn't change the symptoms, but it does change the way I feel about them. It said that depression is in the past, and that's about what's happened to you already. But anxiety is about trying to know the future. And that's something that I always, that's like a setting where it's like, I'm always trying to go, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? What's going to happen? But you can't know what's going to happen. So the way my script goes a lot of times is, what about when the answer it to what will happen to me? What will become of me? How will I feel today or tomorrow or a month from now or a year from now? And the answer is, I don't know. And that's right, anxious. But it can be an I don't know that resonates with openness and possibility. So instead of going, I don't know, you can just say, I don't know. Right? Nice to say, good to say. But that little voice inside just still really wants to know. It's gotta know. It's still mad because you should feel a certain way and you don't. Oh, those shoulds. So have you ever said to yourself, I should be able to go to this event, but I'm just so wiped out? Or I should be able to sit zazen for X number of minutes, 15 minutes, but the pain is so bad. These are fixed ideas. This is clinging to those fixed ideas. This is what some therapists call shoulding all over yourself. I'm not saying the pain or the fatigue or whatever you're feeling is not there. It's there. It's totally there. But how can we talk to ourselves about it in a different way without the word should? So, if anybody wants to take a little stab at rewording, I should be able to go to this event, but I'm just so wiped out, or I'm just so in pain. And I'll take a cloud and I'll take a dirt. If anybody wants to raise their hand and take a shot at rephrasing that without should. No hands in the dirt. Jenny is doing it. Yay. Go for it.
I'd love to be able to go to this event, but my pain might keep me at home today.
Okay. I like that. That's gentler and softer. Anyone else? Okay. I think that when you're talking to yourself about how you're feeling, as flexible as possible about it, and having some softness towards yourself, having some loving kindness for yourself is like really helps it. And this brings us to metta. Loving kindness. Now, recently we did a metta. I don't know how many of you were there for that, but the metta sutra, you read it and you do the exercise where you extend loving kindness outward and you start with yourself, loving kindness towards yourself, and then toward your closest loved ones, and then your family and your friends and the community. In the world, and you just like expand outward. It's a really beautiful exercise. And we did it together here.
Okay.
And I remember Domia was saying, well, you could start with your dog if you want instead of yourself, because it's 100% hard to, and I was experiencing that right away. And she said that, and I'm like, oh, okay. I'll start with Chester, my dog, because he's a very cute little white, fluffy, dumb, you know, little like just helpless creature. Like, how could you not? Like, oh, of course, I just love him. He's just so, you know, dear. And but it's a thing. It's a thing where you kind of stop, like, oh, I have to love myself first. This is really hard. And it was kind of comforting to know that I was not the only one who found this hard. But you know, what would happen if that wasn't hard? Like, if you just had metta for yourself and gave yourself a break. And Coral gave a talk just this last Tuesday, which is a wonderful talk, and the recording's up, so go listen if you haven't. She described being honestly good to yourself and gentle with yourself, and in a kindly, grandmotherly kind of way. And I love that. You know, it helps to sort of think about, well, how would a kindly grandmother talk about me like this? And I talked to Domio about being ill recently and how guilty I felt that I wasn't able to keep up my Zen practice while ill. And based on our conversation, I'll give you two examples and then ask you guys for some brief responses to those examples. So, example number one, let's say you're in a car wreck, and this sounds real because it is, I'm describing my car wreck. You're there on a stretcher on the side of the freeway, and you're looking up at the sky. And then the next thing you know, you're in the hospital waiting for a CT scan. And you're throwing up on the floor. Sorry, real facts. Then you're at home. You're all banged up and feeling crappy. And your neck's in a brace, you know, one of those big donut things. And for some time, it's tough to get around or fix food for yourself. So you have someone caring for you and fixing you dinner while you're propped up on the couch and with pillows all around so that you're in a certain, you know, position. So what would your expectations of your Zen practice be for yourself during this time? Anyone want to? Not very much.
Zero.
Not very much. Zero. 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 Yeah.
Just try to be comfortable.
Just try to be comfortable. Yeah. Cedar, you're right. Just that's the job. That's the job. Okay, so example number two. Say, for example, you have a disabling, complex, chronic illness. You can barely think or get off the sofa or out of bed or pick up a glass without dropping it, or know if you're going to faint or fall, or get through a day without popping pain pills like candy or some other support you're taking advantage of, or any of those, all of them. Now, what would your expectations of your own practice be at this time? Anyone? Ewan.
What you can, when you can, and focusing on the your interactions with others potentially, rather than necessarily sitting for long periods of time or engaging with long Dharma talks, just those little daily life bits of practice that we all try and integrate. Maybe, I don't know. And I'm very much identifying with what you're talking about so far, so that's kind of where I'm at. Thank you.
That, I like what you said, the way you phrased it, little bits of daily life. That's the practice, right? So, yeah, the two scenarios in terms of Zen practice are not any different, because your love for yourself is the same, and you're in a position of acceptance where you just are, where you're at with it. And accepting, acceptance is like the hardest thing to do. For me, this is a big, just, what do you mean accept? What do you mean accept? It's just, what are you saying to me? Because honestly, it's hard to feel anything good about feeling bad. And Jinryu, I'm going to pick on you. Recently, Jinryu pointed out to me, the Dharma gate of joyful ease, right? Seriously? This is not a Dharma gate of joyful ease, you know, at this moment. It's not that what you're feeling is not terrible. It's not that what you're feeling is not there. It is there. It just sucks. Yeah. So from Yuka's talk last week, she quoted from Thich Nhat Hanh, something she found to be very helpful. And this is a quote from Thich Nhat Hanh. One of the first things we can do to soothe our fear is to talk to it. And I was thinking, yeah, you can talk to your sick or hurting self in the same way. You can turn toward the awful and look at it. You sit beside it, just look it in the eyes and say, you, pain or illness or whatever it is, you know, I see you there. I see you there doing your thing. And if you imagine that you want to beat this thing up or chase it away or run from it, you can imagine that. Yeah, you go ahead and do it. Good for you. Imagination is a powerful tool. I never say don't imagine things. And then know that that pain or that awful diagnosis or that illness that you've been stuck with, it will stick there. It will wait, you know, it'll wait for you. It doesn't respond to your resistance, your distractions, your worries, your threats, your inner violence against it. In fact, the more you fight it, the more you shout and run around in your mind trying to get away from it, it might just deepen and resist you right back. So instead, you can try to sit with it and see what happens. You don't have to accept it forever, but just for right now, you can gently and kindly sit with it. And I know what it feels like to be in pain and have something like, what do you mean accept it? What do you mean sit with it? If you can give yourself 1 second of acceptance, then that's what you can give yourself. That is a gift you can allow yourself to have. That 1 second, you can say, I'm gonna cringe in the next second. But for this one, I'm gonna just accept it. And this is a quote from Julie A. Nelson, a Boston Zen teacher and writer and chronic fatigue sufferer. She says, I get very frustrated whenever I think of this malaise as something that saps my vitality and takes me away from the full life I should, if the universe would just do things my way, be living. My practice of sick and useless Zen, on the other hand, reminds me that this life, as it is my full and vital life. It just has some issues. It's just human. And then she quotes Dogen, which I love, because if anyone's going to explain Dogen to me, I get very excited. It's like, please translate, go. this one that many of you are familiar with already, firewood becomes ash and it does not become firewood again. Yet do not suppose that the firewood is before and the ash after. You should understand that firewood abides in the Dharma position of firewood, which fully includes past and future and is independent of past and future. Ash abides in the Dharma position of ash, which fully includes future and past and is independent of past and future. Oh gosh, okay. In other words, Julie Sick abides in the Dharma position of Julie Sick and is not Julie after healthy. It's possible that I'll recover health, she says, but Julie Sick is not Julie waiting to get healthy. Julie Sick is Julie Sick arising. And is my full life coming forth? What a relief. How wonderful. If Zen practice depended on us being in good physical and mental states and piling up accomplishments, it would, without doubt, fail us just when we need it most. Thank goodness. Oh. Our Zen practice does not depend on some ideal physical state of health. We can practice with an acceptance of our health just as it is, and even being grateful for that. And this is where I'm going to go out on a limb. To cultivate gratitude for the gifts of chronic illness is, it sounds crazy, but working with it, practicing with the body, can deepen your practice. And I know that statement can sound really tone deaf. Like, that's easy for you to say. That sounds like something a really healthy person would say, you know, to me. And you don't know how I feel, like inside, you know. but hear me out. Another quote is coming. This one is from Norman Fisher. He has a way of describing how you can turn this, even this, into the path. In his article, Life is Tough, Here Are 6 Ways to Deal with It, from Lion's Roar, he says, you can notice that in this very moment, time is passing. Things are transforming. And this impossible fact is profound, beautiful, and joyful, even as you continue with your misery. I liked that so much, I underlined it. Even as you continue with your misery. Every moment of your life, even, and maybe especially your moments of pain or despair or confusion, is a moment of Buddha. He's not covering it over, pushing it away, or denying it, or counseling you to just believe you'll feel better and you'll feel better, mind over matter, any new agey sounding stuff. I think it's more like your experiences of life are like handles that you can grab onto. And this pain, this particular illness or diagnosis that you're living with is a handle that you can grab onto or put in a more Buddhist sounding way. Your direct experience with suffering, your illness, can be a Dharma gate for you to enter. Now, again, I'm going to quote from Kojitsu Williams. He says, when walking becomes labored, we can bring attention to each step. When our breath catches in the lungs, we rest in the breath we can take rather than grasp for the one we cannot. This is not passivity. It is profound engagement. To say just this is not resignation, but a vow to live fully exactly where we are. Sitting Zazen with a body in decline may be difficult, but the essence of Zazen is not physical posture. Whether in a chair or a hospital bed, we can embody Shikantaza, just sitting. In Zen, this means sitting with no gaining idea, no goal, not even health or recovery. Zazen is the enactment of our inherent Buddha nature, even when we are hooked to machines, even when our organs are failing. Dogen reminds us that practice and enlightenment are one. And so we do not wait until conditions are ideal. We do not wait until the body is strong. We do not wait. I mean, this is when your Zen practice is really put to the test. When you feel like you're in the heavenly realms and everything's great, it's nice outside, your relationships are thriving and your refrigerator's full and your bed is soft. And not only that, but you are fine and you can run around and do anything you want. You're not taking any medications. You're not running to the doctor all the time. And it's great. During these times, it might be easier to take your spiritual practice for granted just a little bit. And I know, because I did. You know, when you're, I don't know, I'm going to try not to get choked up. when I was feeling okay, it was, I was just sort of, you know, meh about my practice. It's not that I didn't care about it. I mean, it's very interesting. It's a continuation of a lifelong interest I had in Buddhism. And it's like, oh, great. You know, I found a new place to go and be with other people on Sundays and do these cool things. And it was really interesting study, you know. But when I got sick again, it became crystal clear how important my practice was. When I could not do sitting zazen, when I couldn't go to sesshin, I really felt it. I really felt it very deeply, so deeply, but in a good way, like if that makes sense, because now I'm grateful to my illness for bringing me to a new place on the path that I wouldn't have arrived at otherwise. Here's another quote, Norman Fisher again. This is from his book, The World Could Be Otherwise. And I put in my little parenthetical comments, but you'll see. Okay. When we have a path like that, he's talking about the Bodhisattva path here. When we have a path like that in our lives, then for sure the world will be otherwise. And we can live in our bodies with happiness and be a blessing for others, even though there will be no shortage of really terrible things going on with our fragile human bodies. And it doesn't mean that things are going to be as we like them. It means that we are willing to fully surrender to impermanence, to surrender to the way things are and live with confidence. So that when difficult things occur, as they definitely will, and most of us will experience the difficulty of illness if we're not already there, we will find a way to accept them completely as our practice and as a way to increase our love and compassion, even when things are hard, especially when things are hard. So in all this, it occurred to me that this is, sounds so simple, but this is the practice. This is sick Zen, pain Zen, disabled Zen, weak Zen, bedridden Zen, whatever it is, fill in the blank Zen. It is, that's it. These feelings and conditions are not obstacles keeping us from some ideal Zen practice that we want. This is the practice. This is it. And I'll wrap up my part with, then it'll be your turn. This excerpt from The Freedom to Love, which is a 2015 talk by Pema Chodron. I love Pema. She doesn't know it, but I do. Pema has given talks on working with chronic illness, specifically chronic pain and chronic fatigue syndrome. She says, the key to working with what is so deeply unwanted is to let go of the ideas, the thoughts about how we shouldn't, there that word is again, how we shouldn't be sick and what will happen to us if we remain sick. Somehow we have to respect the illness. Welcome it, enter into it. We surrender and say, okay, what have you got to teach me about letting go of control, about slowing down, about tasting the full experience of a moment, the light, the sound, the quality of our mood, the quality of our pain, the sight of dust or birds, or nothing special, respecting all that. Something new will be born if you let the illness show you where to let go your grip And please don't scold yourself for failing, ever. So now it's your turn. Without getting too detailed about specific medical conditions, please. if you'd like to share your experiences with illness, and any challenges you run into. So go ahead.
Choked up. Thank you, Leah. And you and I have talked about this at length.
Can they hear you?
I think so. I don't know if I can do this without like getting choked up, but I struggle with chronic pain and illness, and I do fight it all the time. And I think the worst thing for me is the fatigue and the fact that I feel like I disappear from life when I have that fatigue. I'm trying to forgive myself more, but then I think, how is living in the moment when things when I'm unconscious, right? I can't do anything but sleep. There's nothing that my body will let me do. And then there's that fear, because I have to work. I have nobody else. You talk about people allowing people to take care of you. I have nobody to take care of me. If I can't work, it's a big problem. And so I'm trying to work through that. I'm trying to work through the fact that, again, if I'm sleeping, how am I living life when I'm not in it in the moment, you know? So that's a really hard thing for me to do. And I'm working through that now, especially with the fact that I still have years to go and I have to work. I have no choice. So anyways,
okay. Thank you. Ewan.
Thank you so much for that. That was wonderful. I got a lot from that. I'm also a chronic pain sufferer or experiencer, as I'm trying to reframe it in my head, which is what brought me to Buddhist practice, do you know, is that you learning that you can't keep living life the same way when you're dealing with something like that, because you just... Folk talk about this sort of boom-bust cycle where you try and push through it and then you crash out for days and then on and on, when actually the more paced, middle-way approach, for want of a better expression, is what allows you to remain for a long period. And all those challenges that you were talking about, I really identify with. And I mean, the idea of Sishin truly terrifies me in terms of sitting for that period of time or just doing the same thing for that. I'm forever apologising to people in work meetings for wriggling, as I call it, and kind of needing to get up and stretch and move around and kind of pull awkward faces and poses and things. But part of Zen practice, I suppose, has allowed me to accept some of that stuff as just that's just what I need to do to exist in the same space as other people, is be able to do that. And not always, understandably, can you reframe the feeling that's attached to the sensation, but the more I practice, the more it seems to me that I'm able to experience the pain without thinking about it in the same way. I don't know if I can put that into words yet, but in terms of what that actually is doing, but that sort of equanimity that we're all wanting to get a wee bit more of, even if it's just, as you say, like a second more a day, that's a second more, which is really positive. Do you know? And I really identify with what you're saying about meta. I am very bad at meta for me. I'm continually trying to get better at it, but I start with my brother, and if he's behaving, my dog, for where I start meta and build out from there. But I'm still really stumbling when I'm trying to look towards myself. But thank you so much for this. I've got a huge amount from it.
Thank you, Yuma. Thank you for mentioning equanimity. I failed to say that, but yes. Emily.
Hi. Oh, now you guys can see me. I thank you so much for this talk. I really appreciated it. I also struggle with a very debilitating chronic illness, and it is the thing that brought me to Zen practice, but it's also immensely challenging. I often can't sit zazen. I have to do it laying down, and then I'm like, oh no, am I a terrible Buddhist? And I think that I really resonated with what you were saying about how working through pain or illness may be part of the path for, I guess, everybody at different points in their lives, because we'll all experience some extended bouts of pain or disability at some point, if we are lucky enough to live that long. And yeah, so yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciated your talk.
Thank you, Emily. Yeah, go. Oh, no, let's go you and then John.
I think it was a great talk and very necessary. You know, sometimes even in Zen communities, and this can frustrate me if I notice it, and that is that there is a, this just came into my head, a hierarchy of bravado.
I know.
Exactly. Which is bullshit. I am fortunate in that I do not suffer from a chronic illness. I do have chronic back pain, which is very manageable. My latest experience is my knee surgery, which is simply not improving as fast as I expected it to. So there we have these future expectations, which is my own fault. But nobody told me it could be like this. That's one thing about surgery, is they don't tell you. It's all going to be good. You're going to do great.
Yeah,
they don't tell,
just do it.
They don't tell you, if you're not great, what it could be like. And I know that knowing, I just know that I am not suffering as bad as others have suffered with this. But what I was, that has nothing to do with what I was going to say. First of all, what I was going to say, I loved Ewan's earlier comment about you do what you can when you can. Demio might say that I am putting myself above others, and I do not mean to do that, but I cannot separate my practice from my life. I do Zazen because I'm a practicing Buddhist, and that's what we're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And there are times when the day gets ahead of me or gets away from me, and all I have is 10 minutes, but I do that. But when you are taking medication and practicing, that's when it gets, especially if it's post-surgical and the medication is very heavy. And that can be like impossible. In fact, I would not do that.
Right.
I mean, I took the medication. I got yelled at for not doing it right. not this, I take this now, I take that later, I take that after that. I mean, they made me write this list every single morning. And so if I was on one of those heavier medications, I wouldn't even bother to sit zazen because talk about who am I? I mean, you, it's just, you're not really there. So that was one thing. But in terms of just getting around, I mean, the loving kindness to yourself, I mean, it's about care for yourself. I've been doing some reading myself on various topics, and I'm amazed at how much care of yourself, care of your body is mentioned as it relates to Buddhism and Zazen. It's there a lot. And I'm I always strive for finding what is the balance between my practice and other things that I'm doing, which is kind of dumb because practice is all around it. But I, as people know, will push myself. And I think if you are inclined to do that, that's okay. But we really need to be able to distinguish between, am I pushing myself or am I hurting myself? One of the things that yoga taught me, and I thank God for it, is this a pain that I should, where I should stop? Or is this a pain where I could just give it a little bit more and it might get better? And you learn what your body can do when you work on the distinction between those two things. I think I'm rambling a little bit, so I'm sorry, because there's so much here. But a lot of it has to do with knowing yourself and finding that balance between taking care of yourself and continuing to move forward.
Thank you, Jinryu. Yeah, my original working title for this was Zen and Chronic Illness One. Because there could be more. John, you're next.
Thanks for the talk, Leah. It was interesting listening to it while I'm in pain. Recovering from a knee replacement, and can't take my pain med because my liver's acting up. I can't take anti-inflammatories because I want Eliquis for the blood thinning. And anyway, the body's miserable, and you can't sit still and everything else. And I know it's temporary. So, I mean, people who have chronic illnesses, I can't imagine, but just trying to get through this and sit zazen and whatever. I mean, your body doesn't want you to sit still because your body wants you to move, but the movement is painful. Anyway, the thing I wanted to relate was I'm sitting here trying to, trying to get my mind off it, trying to include everything and not just the pain. And moving around, anyway, I go sit outside for just a second, and a zazen fly comes and lands on my knee. And I call them zazen flies that appear to me during zazen,
Okay, I was wondering.
because they teach me a lot, and it happens during session and a bunch of things. People have heard some of my stories. Anyway, the zazen fly comes and lands on my knee and starts moving around. And it's a tiny little fly, not your regular house fly, but a very tiny little fly. Moving around on my knee and creating very tiny little sensations. And I don't know. I mean, sometimes touch isn't good, like if you're feverish or something like that, and touch just hurts or something like that. But touch can really be pleasurable, and your body responds and says, oh, yeah, a little more of that, please. Anyway, this fly sat on my knee and moved around and gave me other pleasures, took out of the pain. 5 minutes, it was wonderful. Anyway, just want to share it.
Thank you, John. Thank you so much. Take care of yourself. Rest. Did you want to? Oh, I'm sorry. But oh, here comes Cedar. Okay.
I just thought I'd share what came up for me this week, in fact. Mm-hmm. So, which is, I've always had, well, since about 2004, problems with fatigue and brain confusion, that kind of thing. And came to Zen during that period. Mm-hmm. And my practice was very intense during that period. And then for many years, it was non-existent. And so I relate to that aspect. Anyway, what came up for me this week was having a feeling of not being able to fully support myself. And yet I have been fully supported in my life, but it's like having like guilt or grief about not coming from me, that I should have accomplished more for myself and supported myself. Mm-hmm. Versus relying on all of the supports that I have actually had in my life. Mm-hmm. And that everything is actually okay, and it's a different path than many people take, and that's okay too. And yet this grief comes up about not being able to accomplish what everybody else seems to be able to accomplish. And there was a little nugget that came for me is in that I often have lack of motivation. Mm-hmm. And because of what occurred this week, I think that that lack of motivation is not allowing the grief to come up. Mm-hmm. And be seen so that I can move forward with something.
Yeah. Thank you, Cedar. That should monster. Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. Oh, it's 12:18. Goodness.
Okay. Mommy, goodness.
How did we do that?
You did.
I want to say quick before I sign us out here that Domyo recently put out a Zen Studies podcast episode, 2, actually. And they're called Supporting the Zen Practice of People with Physical Challenges. And if you think you could benefit from those, do go have a listen to them. They're episodes 303 and 304. That's it. We dedicate the merit of this Dharma discussion to all so that they may be able to realize the truth. All that is throughout space and time, all honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, maha, prajna, paramita.